Welcome to the HTXT AfriCast. I'm your host, Nick Cowan, and seeing as Clinton Matos is away on holiday and Lungezo Shezi is stranded at her house with no means of transport to get into the office, the only person with me is Brendan Lotz. Hello.
Hello.
It's been a busy week this week. It was just me and Brendan here on Monday, yeah. And we have a ton of events coming up this week after, beyond Wednesday. The podcast is being recorded on Tuesday, goes out on Wednesday, and it's a good thing too, because Brendan, you won't be here, you'll be at the MTN
Innovation.
What the hell is that?
So it's a whole bunch of different topics, looking at things like Internet of Things and security and just a whole bunch of innovations that people are doing.
Will there be loads of handsets to play with?
I don't think there will be. There might be. I'm not entirely sure what I'm going to see there, but I'm pretty sure it'll be awesome. So keep a lookout on the site for some more information on that.
Well, it'd be nice to get out of the house at least.
Yeah,
even if it is going to Monte Cassino.
To Four Ways.
Yeah.
Not Four Ways.
They streams to die.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, bank accounts go.
Yeah.
I've got something on the Internet of Things on Thursday, as a matter of fact. Fortinet's invited us to this round table in Sandton, of course in Sandton, on the topic of the Internet of Things turning into Internet threats. The idea that as our world becomes more and more connected, there are more and more vulnerabilities and the ability of hackers to weaponize devices and disrupt digital economies. And that does sound kind of like, scaremongering until you remember the story you wrote about on Monday about the dishwasher.
Yeah. The story of my life, or the headline of my life. So the headline is, researcher discovers web server vulnerability in a dishwasher. So basically what happened is there's this German security researcher, Jens Riegel, who discovered a web server security flaw in a Miele Professional PG8528 dishwasher. Now, to be fair, it's not a dishwasher that you'll have in your home, but it's a dishwasher that they use in laboratories. And that makes this problem even more of a problem. So the flaw would allow an attacker to access the appliance's embedded web server that is constantly listening to port 80 on the internet. So that means that if you were an attacker and you knew that this dishwasher was listening to that port, you could attack the network or that web server and have it listening and gaining potentially other service or sensitive information on the network that the appliance is attached to. And that could be used in other attacks, said the researcher. But it's a problem that has come up time and time again, is that like Miele, you don't expect them to be a tech company because they aren't a tech company. They make appliances, right. They make dishwashers and kettles and all that sort of stuff. So you don't expect them to kind of be on the ball and to be able to fix the stuff quickly. But that becomes a problem because these things should be patched really quickly. So Riegel said that he discovered the flaw in November 2016. He then contacted Miele to inform them of the flaw. And to date, Miele has not contacted Riegel to say it has been patched. But this kind of highlights a problem. Because yes, Miele is not supposed to be a tech company. They don't know how bugs need to be reported or what the procedure is for those sorts of things. But we're getting to a stage where those companies like Miele need to start becoming those tech companies that need to understand that they need to have bug reporting platforms and all that sort of stuff. Because you are now sitting in a situation where anybody with an internet connection and a bad vibe about them can attack your home through your dishwasher.
Which, when you think about it, sounds like the plot for a really crap David Cronenberg film from the 1980s.
Absolutely, it does. But, I mean, these are things we need to start taking into account. Like last year with the Mirai malware that was doing the rounds, there were so many security cameras that were being attacked and corralled into these massive botnets that ultimately took down Twitter, YouTube. They took down a server on the, I think it was the east or west coast of the US. That's quite a big disparity there between the two, but I can't remember the exact coast. But they took down a whole server farm with these, with this botnet. And you kind of got to go, all right, cool. I want my dishwasher to be connected to the internet so that I can tell it to do the dishes before I get home through a fancy little app. But do I want to do that if potentially I'm going to open myself to attackers who are going to be able to access my network and then see all of my sensitive information? So we really need to start taking stuff like Internet of Things security really seriously now. I mean, like I said, this is only being used in a lab, but can you imagine the sort of information you could get from a lab using the dishwasher, for crying out loud?
Well, I mean, you could. I mean, depending on what that lab was, if it was a private firm working on something, you could use the dishwasher for corporate espionage. Which is hilarious. We have an agent in the field, sir. Yeah, he's just on a spin cycle at the moment. He'll be finished in a minute.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just like also Miele not knowing how to do tech security. Like, that's worrying. I mean, these companies are very quick to put these Internet of Things capabilities into their products. But how far are they thinking when it comes to security? And I think the answer is not very far. I speculate that the answer is not very far.
Well, that's got to change over time, though. I mean, because and it probably will when someone rich and famous or rich and important gets hacked through their toaster or something. I think the rest of us are just going to have to just live with it or just buy older appliances.
Yeah. And then in other hacking news that we looked at last week, Apple was reportedly hacked. Ooh, big Apple was hacked. So basically a hacking collective known as the Turkish Crime Family. That's the name they go by. They contacted Apple and said that we have, I think it was 600 and something million. I'm double checking the numbers now. Access account or access to user accounts, and that Apple better pay them. I think it was $100,000 in iTunes vouchers or $75,000 in Bitcoin or Ethereum. So it was six, and they said that they have 627 million Apple and iCloud accounts. So they said to Apple, if you don't pay us, we're going to wipe all of these accounts come April 7th. So Apple has now responded to, or they issued a response to the hackers saying that if the hackers do have access to iCloud and Apple accounts, they didn't get it from Apple. So it's likely that they could have they could be using a database from another hack, from something like Ashley Madison or MySpace or even Yahoo's many hacks that they disclosed last year. So if you have an Apple or an iCloud account and you've used the password that you're accessing that account with on any other sites, Apple advises that you change your password immediately.
Yeah. Of course, it could all just be a big bluff.
Of course it could be. I mean, this is the thing with these things is there's so much data flying around there from users from previous hacks that they could foreseeably be getting into 627 million Apple and iCloud accounts because 627 million people use the same password over and over and over again.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that it's also interesting that they're asking for $100,000 worth of music vouchers.
Yeah, that was weird to me. I didn't get why that. Well, I mean, surely those can be tracked.
But this is the thing. I mean, do they want it in a form of a code? Do they want it in cards? You know, I mean, because I mean, I remember. Do you remember lent you that book Kingpin?
Yeah.
About the carding hackers. And the way that the carding hackers used to make money, apart from obviously selling card information on the internet, was that they would make their own cards, go off, buy a bunch of stuff from shops, and then sell it on eBay.
Yeah.
And you can't really sell on eBay the sort of stuff that they're asking for. And you can't really use it either, because surely in order to use like a code for a certain amount in your iTunes account, you have to enter a code while you're logged into iTunes or Apple Music.
Yeah.
I'm sure at that point, Apple would be going, right, the jig is up.
Well, I mean, they could, further than that, they could just monitor the voucher number that they give them and go, okay, well, the moment that this becomes active, we just geo-trace where this person is from, and bam, you got. So, yeah, I don't understand the 100,000 Rand in iTunes vouchers. Like, the Bitcoin and Ethereum, I can understand. I get that.
$100,000, $100,000, my good man. $100,000.
$100,000. So did I say Rand?
Yeah, you said Rand. And after Pravin Gordhan got called back the other day, I think that it's going to be even more in Rand than it was when they first asked for it.
Poor Pravin Gordhan.
It is interesting to me to see that like this is it's essentially a ransom demand. Because I think the last – was it the last major hack was Ashley Madison where – I mean, obviously, like the Yahoo hack happened, but like, you know, no one came forward from the Yahoo hack going, give us all of this money, otherwise X, Y, and Z will happen. I think the last big hack where the people who breached the system held the company to ransom was the Impact team with Ashley Madison. But they didn't want any money. They just wanted the whole thing taken offline.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that was, I mean, Yahoo's hack was disclosed long after a hack actually happened. But yeah, I think you're right. Ashley Madison was the last time where a big firm kind of got strong-armed by some hackers.
Do this or something bad will happen to you.
Or face the consequences. Yeah. So,
which makes me, maybe the Impact team, like, it looked a little bit more personal than this.
Yeah, you're right. It did feel a little bit more personal than this one. I mean, this one is just like, well, we have this stuff, pay us or we wipe the accounts. And there's no like, oh, well, we have some moral high ground that we want to get on.
Yeah, because like I remember also around about the same time that, you know, I think while I wrote a piece on it saying that we probably should be taking a little bit, you know, well, not a precaution, but certainly should be cautious in our schadenfreude with people who have Ashley Madison to cheat on their other halves. You know, but then again, that's the nature of the internet that like people go, oh no, sod them. They were all cheating on people and they all deserve to get ganked.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like the guy from Spur the other week.
Yeah. But now they apparently can't find him anywhere.
Yes, he's disappeared. He's like the Kaiser Soze of Rustenburg.
Well, I mean,
he's gone underground.
Yeah, would you like stick around for people to try and find you after you did that stuff?
Well, let's face it. Neither of us, it wouldn't occur to us to do that stuff in the first place. We'd probably go, well, I'm not eating fur today. But that having been said, what did happen, which is it's interesting that something you said yesterday, the last time we were talking about this, like following us going, okay, do you really think that like this guy should be having his stuff posted online and where you can find him and blah, blah, blah. And then there's a story emerged that literally the following day about this poor sod in Pretoria who's been getting hate mail and people ringing him up and threatening him and stuff like that because someone went online and said, this is him, this is the guy, get him.
Yeah. And it's like, put his phone number online.
It's not him. He's like, I don't live in Rustenburg and I've never heard of this person and I certainly wasn't at Spur. Could you please, like, leave me alone?
Yeah.
And that's the problem, like, we're so quick to pile on social media because, you know, no one's going to really feel sorry for a racist, especially someone who's trying to assault someone. But like, you know, in a way you can kind of get swept up in a situation where if you don't check the facts, you can actually find yourself part of a movement that is meting out some pretty horrendous stuff against some poor innocent guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway,
so you've been playing Breath of the Wild.
Yes, onto more. Shall we say light-hearted, but at the same time, no less important topics. I finally have gotten around to finishing Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
And can I just turn around to the video game industry right now and say thank you for releasing a ton of open world, very long games all at the same time? Because that's exactly what. I mean, to tell you the truth, you know, I remember at one point sitting on my ledger was Neo, For Honor, Ghost Recon Wildlands, what's the other one? Nier Automata.
Yeah.
And then Breath of the Wild, and now Mass Effect Andromeda. And it's kind of like, you know, unless you're prepared to lock me in a bunker for a month, you're going to wait for these reviews. So, first of all, thank you to you for taking Wildlands off my hands, and thank you to Sahil, who's one of our freelance writers, for doing Neo, and he's going to be doing Automata for us. But yeah, it was really, really good. I started playing Breath of the Wild about a couple of weeks ago, and at the same time, you might remember, I was sick.
Yeah, I remember.
And what was really cool about that, obviously, was because it's on the Switch, so I could just take it out of the dock and go and sit in bed. And when I was not feeling completely sorry for myself, I could play it in bed.
Sorry, can I just interrupt there? Because that's one of the coolest things about the Switch. Because, like, when I'm sick, I still would like to play games, but I don't want to sit in front of my PC and sit here with a runny nose and like, oh, I feel so sorry for myself. I just want to play this game. But I really like that about the Switch. Sorry, you can see.
No. I mean, because that's the other thing about it. It wasn't just that I was in my bedroom playing the Switch. Like, I had to go to a couple of events last week, and I was Ubering there and back, and I would just sit back in the back of the Uber playing with the Switch. The battery life on it is about 2 hours and 45. So it's great in short bursts. The only thing I'd say is that, like, it feels, weirdly enough, it feels more natural to play the game on the small screen than the big screen, not because of the control interface or anything, but like the even though Breath of the Wild is gorgeous, I mean, you've seen it, it looks beautiful, it looks like a painting come to life.
Yeah.
And you cover every blade of grass, and the design of it is just beautiful. It's very, very magic and fantastical. But there are some times when you're playing on the big screen, which I think it's up to 30 frames per second, you can get lag if the screen fills up with a bunch of enemies.
Okay.
But like on the handheld, I didn't personally experience any lag at all. So that was really cool. So basically, what Breath of the Wild is about, and this is the thing, it's one of those games that whether or not you've played a Zelda game doesn't really matter, because if you've played a Zelda game, you kind of know what you're getting into, and you know. If you've played a Zelda game and you're a Nintendo fan, you're probably not even listening to this at the moment. You're probably busy playing Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
But if you've never played a Zelda game before, this is a good place to start, because the game kicks off like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. Link has been, you know, hibernating for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. So Hyrule's changed quite a lot from last time he was there. So, you know, you wake up with the protagonist who kind of knows his surroundings but doesn't really know what's going on in the world and doesn't really know what's outside the cave he's been hibernating in. So in a way, as you step into the world, you're in exactly the same position as Link. So
you have no idea what's previous, going on.
Yeah, and also all previous lore is so locked in the past that it doesn't really impact that much on the story that you're having now. Ganon is back. Except this time he's not a pig beast, and he's not the huge dude with a sword. He's a big cloud of evil, and Princess Zelda's been trying to keep him under wraps while you were hibernating, but he's taken control of some rather large assets in Hyrule called, what are they called? The Divine Beasts and the Guardians. And basically that allows him to run the table. And you're basically woken up as almost a last resort. You're like the champion of Hyrule, and it's like, right now it's time for Link to come and save us. And you step out, and there's a small area at the beginning where it's a slight sort of half gameplay, half tutorial, and then you just cut loose in this magnificent wide world. If you want to, you can literally go to the final boss right from the beginning.
Oh, that's cool.
No, well, yeah, it is, but like you'll just get stomped.
Well, yeah, obviously, but it's cool that you can just go straight there if you think that you're cool, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's not like, oh no, you have to unlock 50 gates before we'll let you in here.
No, but it is, you've got four divine beasts at four different parts of the map, and the structure of the game does kind of make you work in a clockwise fashion to tackle one after the other.
Yeah.
And as you do, you obviously level up and you get better weapons and you get better armor and you get more supplies. I mean, you're going to be doing a lot in this game. You have fights, you've got climbing, you can cut down a tree and surf and stand on it as it goes down a river. You can cook, and depending on what food you're cooking, that gives you different bonuses. There are shrines to find, there are towers to climb that you can get fast travel from. There's more dungeons. There's tons of characters to interact with. I mean, you can find a horse, a quadrupedal animal, and break it and then ride it. You know.
Okay.
So it's very much, it's kind of like Nintendo have got a game that is very, very, very much a Zelda game. It feels like a Zelda game, but it takes a few pages out of the playbooks of things like The Witcher 3 or Elder Scrolls Skyrim.
Okay.
But it doesn't nick from those games. It kind of looks at what they do and then it adapts them and Nintendo-izes them, if that's even a verb. Just because it still has these quirky things that Nintendo put in. Like, for example, you have weapons and all of your weapons are perishable. I mean, you'll only use them to hit something like so many times and then they break. And that initially is annoying because you don't get to hang on to like, the cool sword or whatever. Mm. But it also means that you treat every single piece of looting that you do almost like it's just, you know, this is going to end up as junk. So don't, as junk at some point. So don't get precious about anything. And it also allows you to mix up quite a bit because you're allowed to carry several weapons at the same time. And you can switch between them as they break or you can switch between them as the attacks require. Also, if you knock like a particularly cool weapon out of the hand of an enemy, you can pick it up and use it on them. So that's pretty cool.
Oh, that's cool.
Hmm. Then you've got the weather system. And the weather system,
I really like that in your review, how you describe that.
Yeah, but like I said, it is both lovely and annoying because like in a lightning storm, if you're carrying any metal weapons, you'll get electrocuted. So you either have to get rid of them or hide in a or get some shelter and wait out the storm. The other thing is like if you're climbing up a cliff or if you are climbing a rock face and it starts raining, you start to slip.
And at that
particular point, you've got a stamina meter in the form of a circle that deteriorates as you exert. So you can find yourself halfway up the mountain. It starts to rain, you start to slip, and it's like, well, okay, well, I'll jump off now, and I'll use my paraglider to go all the way down, and I'll wait until it stops raining.
That's really awesome. I like that idea. It's a really cool little mechanic, because add something to the game. It's not just, oh, look, it's pretty. There's actually a reason for it, and you have to wait, and I think it's really awesome.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, it is. And the cool, one of my favorite things to do is to go up to a high area and leap off with the paraglider and then just take in the view as you glide gently down to earth. It's really, really beautiful. Because like I said, it's very beautiful. I mean, it's not going to challenge a game like Horizon Zero Dawn in terms of visual fidelity, just because the PS4 is a more powerful machine than the Switch. But it's one of those games that makes great use of everything about the Switch as a visual gaming platform. Mm-hmm. It plays to the Switch's strengths very, very well. And in fact, I think I said this in my review, but what The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild is something that the PS3 didn't have at launch and the Xbox One didn't have at launch and the PS4 didn't have at launch, which is a killer app. It's a system seller.
Gee.
Unless of course you own a Wii U, in which case you can pick up a copy for the Wii U for cheap.
But you want to play it on the go. You want to be able to play it while
you're sick in bed.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this is the thing. I'm not really a journalist or a gamer who's prayed at the altar of Nintendo very much. I mean, a lot of Nintendo I can take or leave. Whenever I review a game, for Nintendo's platform, especially if it's made by Nintendo, I usually am just very impressed by the craftsmanship, but I don't have the love for Mario and Luigi that loads of other people do. I just sit there going, wow, this is incredibly well made and well balanced and the level design is incredible and look what they've done with the mechanics. It's awesome. Do I care that the princess is in another castle? No, I don't.
So it's the exact opposite of what Hearthstone is like at the moment.
Yeah, pretty much. Whereas with Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, I actually got very invested in the story.
Yeah.
And very invested in the characters. And even though the voice acting at times is a little bit flat, and some characters, you know, are very brief, you want to see what's over the next horizon. You want to see what's around the next corner. This is a game that does offer you the option to fast travel, but I hardly ever used it because I was just having so much fun exploring the world.
That's great. I'm really happy that a game like this exists because it sounds like fun.
Here's the thing. We might have a bit of a lull in terms of what Nintendo are going to be sending out for the Switch in the coming months. In which case, if you've got some time off, I can lend you the Switch because this is one of those things where I'd say, okay, if you don't own a Switch or a Wii U, it is worth borrowing one from a mate to play this. It is that good.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you're like, it's so good, it's kind of like video game canon.
Okay.
But it was really great to see, especially after all the delays and is it not coming to the Wii U? What's happening with Zelda? Another delay, you know?
Yeah.
To actually finally have come here and come out and kick ass like gangbusters, it was really quite, you know, heartening in a way. You know, and it's one of those games that also is like, it's not like Gears of War or Call of Duty, which involves peppering people with bullets and chopping them up. Yeah. I mean, there's a fighting system in play, but it's beautifully cartoon-like. It's really, really nice.
You want to play it? Yeah.
The only other game I'm playing at the moment has been Mass Effect Andromeda.
Yeah.
And I've only just started that, so I'm going to reserve judgment on. I'm going to reserve comment, let's say, on what I think of it so far. But that probably gives you a clue of what I think. So
okay. Eish.
Well, this is the thing. The one thing I would say about Mass Effect Andromeda right off the bat to begin with is that the Mass Effect games for me were more about exploring and story than they were about actual shooting.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of gun battles in the first couple of hours of Mass Effect Andromeda. Like a lot of gun battles.
That worries me.
Well, I mean, you never know.
We'll wait. We'll wait and see. I'm not going to judge it too soon. Wait and
exactly. See. You know, I mean, if we judged all games by like how their first couple of hours were, like Final Fantasy 15, I don't think would have done as well as it did, because that does start as a slow burn. It really does, but like it does pick up quite quickly. I'm hoping that Mass Effect Andromeda starts to pick up. So I like the Mass Effect series, and I was one of the few players who didn't feel that BioWare should have been burned at the stake just because the end of Mass Effect 3 wasn't great, which it wasn't, but you were like, still had a good time playing all of them.
Yeah, I'm still one of my favorite game series.
So are you ready for the Year of the Mammoth?
No. Let's be brutally honest, I'm really sad. So we now have an actual release date the Journey to Angora expansion, which is the 5th of April. And we know that because Blizzard has a couple of things planned for the Journey to Angora expansion. One of those things is a whole bunch of free cards and a golden card on release day. So I'm just opening the link up quickly just to go through the what's Blizzard has planned for the build-up to the release.
Let's get the elephant in the room, or the mammoth in the room, out of the way. Shaman, that's getting a bit ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah, it is getting a little bit a little bit out of hand. So Blizzard has been releasing cards in drips and drabs for the last couple of weeks, and a couple of them are really cool, and some of them are just overpowered. So in the case of Shaman is getting a rare mana, or a rare rarity, 7 mana, 4/4 elemental. With the battle cry, if you played an elemental last turn, you disappeared. 2/3/3 elementals with taunt. So it's not even a legendary, and it's got this really powerful battle cry effect. That's just ridiculous. I suppose it's like a reverse of the meme of the 4 mana 7/7. This is a 7-mana 4/4, but you get two bodies with taunt on the board, no overload, it's out of hand. It's just ridiculous. And their legendary isn't too bad. He is Kalamos, Primal Lord, Battlecry. If you played an Elemental last turn, cost an Elemental Invocation. And the invocations are all very different. And they can do damage, they can heal you, they can do damage to the board, they can summon things. It's pretty cool. But it is overly powerful. Overly powerful. So, just to go over, yes.
Well, I mean, to be quite frank, as someone who plays a Paladin Dragon deck for fun, I have to say that I haven't really seen much. Have you seen many of the Paladin cards so far?
There are a few. I will go to them now. So, Paladin at the moment, we have seen quite a few cards, actually. Their legendary is Sunkeeper Tarim. Which is a 6-mana 3/7 with a taunt, and Battlecry said all other minions attack and health to 3. So I quite like this because it's kind of a way to deal with all the Jade decks that are out there at the moment. You can wait until your opponent has played what you think is their last Jade card and then set all their health to 3, and it helps you deal with the board a little bit better. So I quite like that. Then they also have a spell called Dino-Sized, which gives a minion 10, set of minions attack and health to 10. And that's a 8-mana card, or 8-mana rare spell. That looks really cool, because that you can buff one of your little dudes that you summon, the Silverhand Recruits, to 10-10 immediately, and it's just good value. But possibly my favorite card from the Journey to Angora for Paladin is the Lightfuse Stegodon. With the battle cry, adapt your Silver Hand Recruits. It's a 4-mana 3/5, and so you can add Divine Shield, you can add Attack, Wind Fury, Charge, all of those things. So I really, really like this card. This is possibly my favorite one so far. So, if you're wondering how to get your hands on some of these cards, you can pre-order through the store for €44 at the moment. If you're playing through EU, and if you're playing through the US, it's $49.99 or something around there.
Yeah.
You just need to check in the store. But if you want to get some free packs, Blizzard is actually holding like a mammoth celebration. So, starting from today, the 29th of March, all you need to do is log into the Hearthstone client. So if you log in today, you get 50 gold free. The 30th of March, you get a Mean Streets of Gadgets and card pack. And then at the end of the month, you get 100 dust. Then on the 1st of April, when you log in, you get a Whispers of the Old Gods card pack. On the 2nd, you get a Journey to Angora card pack. The 3rd, you get 50 gold. And on the 4th of April, you get a Journey to Angora card pack as well. These are just for logging in. And then on the 5th of April, and it has a little asterisk next to it, we'll get to that in a second, you get a Golden Volcano Soul, which is a 7-mana 5/6 with the battle cry, adapt, then adapt. So you can adapt this minion twice, which is really, really cool. And it's gold, so if you don't like gold cards, it's a rare card, you can get about 800 dust for it, which is awesome.
That is awesome. Yeah. I'm currently on 3,500 dust.
Well, keep that. Because there's going to be some awesome legendaries to craft for Journey to Angora. Also, so then there's a little asterisk on the 5th, on April the 5th. It has the subnote that to receive a Golden Volcanoso card reward, you'll need to log in with a Hearthstone client that has been fully updated for Journey to Angora. So
April Blizzard.
you'll have to log in on the 5th. And that's when I believe that you'll be able to start opening your Journey to Angora packs and start the Journey to Angora. Also, sorry, there was one very cool legendary card that I forgot to mention. So, Elise Starseeker from the League of Explorers, who put the Golden Monkey into your the map to the Golden Monkey, and then you put the Golden Monkey into your deck. She's back as Elise the Trailblazer. So it's a 5-mana 5/5, which is a really good turn 5 play, but her battle cry is really awesome. So the battle cry is shuffle a sealed Angora pack into your deck. So that sounds exactly like what it is. So you put in a 5 cards, a sealed pack, into your deck, and when you draw it, that's a 2-mana cost card. You open it, and you get 5 cards, which can contain legendaries from any class, I believe. And you put them into your deck, and then you can use, or into your hand, and you can use it. Right.
Aha, but that requires you to have bought packs.
Well, no. Well, you can craft Elise. You don't have to have bought the packs. She just shuffles a sealed pack, and it's in the borders of that game. Once the game's over, you don't actually get that pack. You just get those cards to use during that.
Oh, wow, that's pretty cool. You come at this from the tactical side of things. The one card I'm really looking forward to using is King Mosh.
Oh, yes.
9 cost dinosaur that kills all the damaged minions as it comes out of your hand.
And it's a really good turn play, turn 10 play as well. Yeah. Because you can Whirlwind with Warrior, which does 1 damage to all minions. And then play this dude, and nobody can do anything. You just clear their board, and that now they have a 9/7 minion to deal with.
Yeah. Now, before we close up shop, Year of the Mammoth sees the retiring of a lot of cards.
Oh, yes.
So, my question for you is, which card are you going to miss the most, and which card are you most glad to see the back of?
That's really tough. Okay, honestly, I think Reno. I'm quite happy to see the back of Reno Jackson. Because it's just, you know, it kind of creates a deck building where people don't have much creativity. Because you can kind of see it coming as well. You know, you can see that this guy's only played 1 obs the whole game. So I don't really think that playing this now is a good idea. I'm quite happy to see the back of Reno, even though I will admit to having used many Reno decks in my day. What can I say? He worked.
But you know, he was making you lazy.
Yes, he made me very lazy in terms of my deck building. The card that I think I'm going to miss the most is that's really difficult. I think it's going to be, if it has to, it's going to be Azure Drake. Not because it's rotating out because it's part of a set, but it's going into the Hall of Fame set now. I'm really going to miss that card because it was so versatile. It was a good turn 5 play. It drew you a card and it gave you spell damage. To replace all of those is going to be very, very tricky. I think Azure Drake is the card I'm going to miss the most, and Reno is the one that I'm happiest to see going.
That's funny because the one I'm going to miss, the one I'm glad to see the back of, which is like you, I used to use it a lot, is Bran Bronzebeard.
Oh, yes.
Him and his triggering battle cry. Rubbish. Just because, like, as time went on and I started rotating new cards into my decks, even though I do have like 1 or 2 people or 1 or 2 cards that have battle cries, they weren't really. I didn't have them as many to warrant the inclusion of Bron. But the thing is, you always find yourself playing against someone who sticks out something massive with a taunt and then sticks Bran right behind him. And you just sit there seething as this guy's, as this opponent of yours is attacks ramp up and up and up, you know. I'm not gonna be sorry to see him go.
Yeah.
But just the card I'm probably gonna miss the most, just because it was a load of fun to play, especially when I play decks that have quite high cards coming out of them. Yeah. So sometimes I will literally throw a card onto the board that's a high cost card just to draw out things like Transmutation or Shadow Word Death.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah. The big removals.
Once those cards have been exhausted, I used to throw Ragnaros onto the board.
Yeah,
and he's loads of fun to play with. So I'm going to miss him the most, I think.
I won't miss him. It was up between Rag and Reno. But yeah, I think Reno is more of an annoyance than Rag. I will miss Rag though. He's a good card.
And that brings us to the end of our podcast. Thank you very, very much for listening. If we lost you at the end of there, we suggest you play Hearthstone because it's free. We will be back next week with more good stuff from all the events that we are going to be running around like headless chickens at this week. And this, I don't know about you, Brendan, but after this week, I'm buying a box of Tim Tams and some tea, and I'm spending the week indoors and not doing anything the weekend.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you very much, Brendan.
Thank you, Nick.
And we'll see you next week. Bye.
Sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.